You are listening to Miller and Moulton, exclusively on the Florida Sports Network. And now, here's Mark Miller and David Moulton.
Hour two of Miller and Moulton. Steve Carney will join us just past the bottom of the hour. We're going to, you know, catch up on the Rays and Marlins the rest of the week. You know, they're both below 500 heading into May, based on what the Rays have done for basically the last 15 years. And also what the Marlins did last year. Very disappointing first 5 weeks of the season. We'll catch up on the Rays today. We'll catch up on the Marlins before the week is done. We're also, Kurt Becker will join us near the end of the week. 150th Kentucky Derby. You know, we had vowed to go to this one a couple years ago, you know.
Based on the conversations we had more recently in the show about the two of us and economically how well this show is doing, pretty right. much give the reasons why we're not going to the Derby this year.
Right. I mean, 2.5 years ago, it was, you know, we were going to get a motorhome and we were going on the road and where the thing's going to be sponsored and we're going to travel the Southeast and be live. And we're going to the 150th Derby, right? Absolutely. Made plans before the 148th Derby to go. Mm-hmm. So anyway, they're having the race Saturday. We'll talk about it with Kurt Becker before the week is up.
And I'm usually up to date on my Derby prep races. This year I was terrible. I do know that both favorites are in lousy post positions.
What, one's like near the rail and the other's near the end?
Yeah. So that,
yeah, that's not ideal. So, all right. You break out any of your Derby bourbon for the race, or is that just for decoration?
Just decoration.
Oh, okay, good. One of those. All right, good. Hey, you stumbled upon something, though, before the show. And for those in Jacksonville and Huntsville, and you're just getting used to Miller and Moulton, thank you. And stick with us. It'll get better. So we're into a few things. You'll find that out. One of them is we love over-unders, especially win total over-unders. And when they come out, we get very excited, particularly in football. And apparently yesterday an over-under came out.
Saw a post football about Florida State's over-under, so I went looking. Now, the Hard Rock app doesn't have them yet.
Okay.
But a couple of the sites do have them, and Vegas Insider has a post with all of the win totals on there. Uh-huh. There are 5 teams with win totals at 10.5.
10.5. Now, conference championship games don't count, correct? This is just regular season.
Regular season. The 5 teams with win totals at 10.5 are Georgia, Oregon, Ohio State, Texas, and Notre Dame.
Notre Dame?
Notre Dame.
That's lofty expectations there.
It really is. Now, to me, Oregon and Ohio State are no real surprises. They're going to be the class of the Big Ten this year. Georgia is who they are. Texas at 10.5 first year in the SEC is a lofty number as well.
Well, there's a couple of things, and you know, this is where I get myself in trouble, Mark, playing the schedule game. But Ohio State and Oregon play each other in the regular season in Eugene. So, you know, obviously one of them is going to lose, and in theory, they can't lose another one. Now, let's just say Ohio State loses on the road. They're going to be favored in every other game they play.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you could still bet the over, even if you think they're going to have a tough time in Eugene. Now, if you think Ohio State's going to beat Oregon, don't you bet the under on Oregon?
I was going to say, it feels like you're almost picking one or the other for that number because yeah. They're in the same conference now.
Couple of things. Let's get to the Florida schools here. Miami and Florida State are both at 9.5.
Well, this is if, can you think Mario can coach? because he's crushing it recruiting, and they are destroying people in the portal. I mean, he has landed 10 four- or five-star players in the portal this offseason. And one of them's a quarterback.
Care to guess what the Gators over-under is?
Well, wasn't it 5.5 last year?
Yes.
I'm going to guess it's the same.
It's exactly the same, David. Great guess. The Gators are at 5.5.
They had the toughest schedule, some people think, in the history of schedules. Although I'll put Bobby Bowden's schedule from the mid-80s there when he played, you know, the death row, five games in a row, all on the road, all ranked up against anybody. But they were an independent then, and they had to put together the schedule they had to put together. But, I mean, Florida's got 11 Power 5 games on their schedule next year. They literally play UCF, Miami, and Florida State in-state, and then they play an SEC schedule.
Right. They finish, just not to bore you with their whole schedule, but preseason rankings are what they are. They finish after a bye week before the Georgia game with preseason number one Georgia. They follow that up with at number four Texas. They host number 12 LSU. Then they host Ole Miss, number six preseason, and finish at number 15, Florida State.
Right. So the last five opponents are all preseason top 15.
Right.
Well, that was last year. Remember, they were, I think, 5-2 going into the Georgia game. And we said that, you know, hey, they got to get one of their final whatever to go to a bowl. And sure enough, they had Arkansas beat at home and blew it. They had Missouri beat on the road and blew it and ended up with a losing season.
For the record, other preseason top 25 teams on the Gator schedule, number 24 Miami, at or number 25 A&M, at number 16 Tennessee, and home for number 23 Kentucky. Brutal.
Brutal. Brutal. Yes. I mean, Michigan's schedule is hard. By the way, what's Michigan's over-under? Because if it's...
It's 8.5, isn't it?
No, I thought it was a little higher than that, which just stunned me. Michigan's at 9.5.
Yeah, you got to go under on Michigan. You do. Take a look at their schedule. First off, week two, they host Texas. Which also, keep that in mind with Texas's over-under. Texas joining the SEC, and one of their non-conference games is at Michigan.
So, David, let me ask you this real quick. How low would the over-under have to be for you to take the over on Michigan?
7.5. I think there's a real possibility Michigan can lose five games this year. So, I would, at 7.5, I might just say, you know what, okay, they could go 8-4. But anything... Yeah, 9.5. It might be my best bet of the year, the under on Michigan.
By ranked teams, Florida has a much more difficult schedule than the Wolverines do. Michigan opens with Fresno State. Then they play Texas at home. Then Arkansas State. USC.
At home, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Minnesota. At Washington.
Now, I'm just going to throw this out there. Think of the Minnesota game, and you're going to laugh, but look at what it squeezed in between. It squeezed in between USC and at Washington. That's a bad spot for Michigan, okay? And that's the game, okay, or the second biggest game on Minnesota's schedule for the year. I'm telling you, that's a bad spot for Michigan.
At Illinois, home for Sparty, home for Oregon, at Indiana, home for Northwestern at Ohio State.
So think about it. Now they get a lot of guys at home. They get Texas, USC, Oregon all at home, correct?
Yes.
And at Ohio State.
That is right.
Yeah, they ain't winning 10 games.
Yeah, I don't think so.
I mean, they're losing to Ohio State. So that's one, which means they can only afford one other loss on the schedule. At Washington is not going to be easy at all. That'll be damn near a pick'em game. And then they got to beat Texas and USC when they both come to town. And remember, USC comes to town early in the year. What do we know about USC? They get worse as the season goes on. Michigan gets them early. You want to play USC in November when Notre Dame plays them this year on the road. Remember, new playoff. I mean, that game could be monstrous, by the way, Notre Dame at USC. Notre Dame playing, you know, they can't get a top four seed, but Notre Dame maybe to secure their spot in the playoff. But also, is that for USC with a win? Could they get themselves in the playoff? I mean, the November schedule this year, this new expanded playoff, could bring a lot more meaning to a lot more games.
That's what we're hoping for, because it was quite a while ago when we took on ESPN and the college football world that said every game mattered and kind of explained to people that they didn't.
No.
A handful of games matter.
Right. By mid-October, very few games mattered the rest of the year. Correct.
We don't think that will be the case with a 12-team playoff.
Because you have to figure, I'm sorry, I'm figuring on four teams from the SEC and four teams from the Big Ten until proven otherwise. And then you got the ACC champ, the Big 12 champ, and then the Group of Five champ. That's three. So now we're at 11. Notre Dame would fill it out and make 12. So then think about it. A second-place team in the ACC or Big 12 would have to be deemed more worthy than the number four team from the SEC or the Big 10. And now maybe you get lucky the one year Notre Dame's not good enough to make the playoff. Then that leaves an extra spot maybe for a second ACC team. How about this, by the way? When do you think the Big 12 gets two teams? Take a look who's in the Big 12. Like, I can see the ACC getting multiple bids. While Florida State and Clemson are still in the conference, Mark, I can see that league getting at least two bids. Tell me when you think the Big 12 is going to get two bids.
When the ACC crumbles and they get more teams put in their conference. And I'm not being flippant. I'm being dead serious, David.
I asked you.
Dead serious. I don't see how that conference is going to get two teams with its current makeup, with the power that's in the Big Ten, the power that's in the SEC, Notre Dame out there, and as you mentioned, Clemson and Florida State from the ACC. Miller and Moulton, thanks for listening.
You're listening to Miller and Moulton, only on the Florida Sports Network.
Past the hour. Steve Carney will join us in a little more than 15 minutes time. We'll check in 5 weeks into the baseball season. Little Rays, little Marlins before the week is out. Seth Everett will join us at the top of the hour. Lots of topics to talk with Seth about. And Bud Elliott joins us in a little more than an hour. A lot going on in the college sports world. You may think that there's not. There is a ton going on. Also, I think today is the deadline for the portal. Like in basketball and football, you have to decide, I think, by 11:59 p.m. Eastern tonight whether you're going portaling or not.
So there have been a couple players in particular, like Illinois, Coleman Hawkins. He was under some heat yesterday because he had declared for the draft weeks ago, you know, after Illinois season ended. And then he came back yesterday and put his name in the transfer portal. And everyone's like, well, what the heck? You're leaving us. You know, you go into the draft, that's fine, but now you're going to enter the transfer portal. He's just saying, I'm just doing it to basically cover my butt.
Yeah, hey.
In case you want a grad transfer now, you have to declare by May 1st.
Right, and you have to declare. You don't have to sign. You don't have to commit
right.
by 11:59 p.m. Eastern tonight, but you have to raise your hand, fill out the paperwork and say, yeah, I'm portaling, which is basically saying, I'd like a little more money where I'm at.
I'm a free agent. Pay me.
Right.
It is free agency, but it is leverage for the players, which is nice to see for once.
It's remarkable what's happened in the last 3 years. Three years what's happened.
And it's remarkable the hatred that people have towards the portal. Oh, once man. Again, damned if someone makes any more money. Don't screw the team I root for.
Right.
We can circle back and ask Seth about this because we know he hates the portal.
He hates the portal, yet, and this is the conundrum that college fan really has. First off, Mark, we think now, finally, first time ever, you and I have been polling this topic for the 18 years we've done a show together, whether or not the fan thinks the players should be compensated. And for most of our existence, the answer was somewhere between no and hell no. In the last couple of years, I feel as if we got to about 40%. Yeah, okay, I believe they should be compensated. But still, there was the majority that felt, no, I want to go back to how it used to be. Now I think people are realizing that's not going to happen. They may not be in favor of it, but they're reconciling it. But they don't like the combination of the players being compensated and the portal. That's new. No. They would want one or the other. And what I'm curious about, Mark, I don't know when you heard the story earlier in the week, and Trent, you as well, because you're a huge college sports fan. You know, the whole trying to resolve this antitrust suit and what it is they're going to put together to go forward. Don't you think they have to start getting multi-year contracts into the equation? Don't you want, if you're a college sports, less kids in the portal?
Yeah.
Because like Nick talked about it, where basically after the Rose Bowl, you know, guys at Alabama were getting whatever they were getting. Legally, remember, whatever they were getting. And a handful of them came up to his desk after the game, and they're like, yeah, coach, next year it's going to be more. Nick hadn't planned for it. And don't you think, Mark, if you're running an athletic department, and it's a gamble, because let's just say you sign me to a three-year deal. I get hurt. I'm not the player that I was when you signed me.
And well, there you just got to it, David, because what the schools really want and have always wanted is to have it both ways. Mm-hmm. The scholarship that we always assumed, and we largely as sports fans, we just assumed the scholarship was a four-year thing. No, it was 4 1-year deals.
Right.
And they had the right to cut you at any point that they wanted. They want that same right. They want the same thing.
But I think they now, but if you're the colleges, if I give you the option of, it's year to year, baby, year to year, or no, we'll give you the ability to sign multi-year contracts, and that can go both ways. You can sign Moulton. Okay, he can get hurt, or he's just not as good as we thought. We made a mistake, and now we're stuck paying him for 3 years.
Right, he could become a liability on the cap, which happens in pro sports.
Or we sign Miller, and after 1 year, we go, holy blank, Miller's a lot better than we thought. And Miller's going, man, I can't believe I signed for this. I'd be worth three times more. And that school's smiling, going, yeah, we got your butt for 2 more years, dude. Don't know what to tell you.
We're getting a bargain.
If you're the colleges, Mark, year to year, one or the other, year to year, or the ability to sign multi-year contracts. And you're stuck. You have to live with the multi-year contract. You can't get out of it like you can now.
I think the colleges would prefer the year to year.
And I think they'd prefer the multi-year because cost certainty. Because they're going to have to, you know, right now the boosters are paying. They know that pretty soon it's coming directly through the athletic department. And there's going to be a salary cap. Don't kid yourself. There's going to be some kind, even if it's like baseball, where it's a tiered system, there's going to be something.
Well, in the conferences, I mean, the Big Ten and the SEC would love to put a salary cap in right now. Then they'd have to admit that they're employees.
Which they'll never do.
Well, how don't you think that's what they admitted in Dallas last week?
Yes.
Negotiations? I mean, when you're talking about revenue sharing, well, you have to negotiate. That's a negotiation. Well, who are you negotiating with? Employees, right? Who else are you negotiating with?
Well, their salary cap would be negotiated. In their perfect world, David, now, come on. In their perfect world, they'd want to negotiate with the other schools of what the salary cap is, establish it, and try to screw the kids as much as possible because that's what they want to do.
Okay, and maybe that's it. Maybe they'll just, you know, say, hey, every school can set their own limit. But, I mean, we all know that there's 20 schools that would never set a limit. What's Ohio State's limit? Infinity.
Michigan's times two.
O-H.
Right. You know, Texas A&M, a limit? Are you kidding?
SMU so excited they would never sign for a limit. We can do this legally now? Are you kidding me?
By the way, don't you think SMU is one of those people wanting back pay? Not just the athletes. Don't you think it's SMU going, you guys owe us a little bit for that death penalty?
Time now for our Molly Maid play of the day. Trent, what do you have for us?
Death penalty. Well, not dead yet are the Toronto Maple Leafs. David Moulton was hoping they'd get crushed to force their hand to blow it all up. And instead, they win a slugfest, ugly game in Boston over the Bruins. And here's the game winner in overtime.
Tavares down the right wing, trying to barge to the front of the goal. He does! They score! They score! The Leafs have won the game! Nice jumping it in as Tavares one-handed in front. The Leafs are coming home, and they've won game five by a score of 2-1. Holy mackerel, what a play.
Joe Bowen on the call there for Leafs Radio, and they stave off elimination. As he said, they're coming home to Toronto, and it's 3-2. Bruins, we've got a series. All of a sudden.
Call Molly Maid today at 239-774-5839. That's 239-774-5839. Molly Maid, make sure you tell them that Miller and Moulton sent you.
Seth Everett at the top of the hour. Bud Elliott in about an hour. But Steve Carney will join us. Talk a little baseball next.
You're listening to Miller and Moulton, only on the Florida Sports Network. And now, here's Mark Miller and David Moulton.
22 minutes till the top of the hour. Seth Everett joins us at the top of the hour. Bud Elliott will join us 1 hour from now. It's a hump day. Let's get over it together. It's also May Day. We're one-third of the way through the year. I hope the year has gone well for you, and I hope it gets even better. Steve Carney is kind enough to join us once again. StPete9.com. StPete9.com. Also, Under the Orange Roof is the Rays podcast. Under the Orange Roof. You can follow Steve on X at Steve Carney, C-A-R-N-E-Y. Steve, it's David and Mark. Thanks for joining us. How are you?
I'm good, guys. Although after what happened last night, I think I need to change my website's name to StPete9Rounds.com.
Nice. Well done, young man. Well done. That's outstanding. Listen, Steve, we commented earlier. We love a baseball brawl, but you can't slap. You got. If you're going to get suspended 3-5 games, don't you have to close your fist?
Yeah, tell Abner Uribe that because that's what got it all started. At least if you are going to slap more than once. That's what Jose Siri. At least he got like 3 or 4 shots in.
Right.
You're going to get suspended for 3-5 games. Get at least as many shots in.
You know, this may sound silly, Steve, but that little brawl, is that something the Rays needed? Did they need a kick in the pants? Something to – I mean, they're banged up. We know that. The injuries are there. But they need something to spark them and could perhaps last night be what they needed?
Yeah, I really think that something needs to wake up the bats. Obviously – you know, they've scored 3 runs in the last 2 games. I mean, they won a game 2 nights ago, 1-0, when they didn't even get an RBI. It's the first time they've done that in 3 years. But they need something that says, hey, it's now no longer April. Let's get the show on the road, and let's get going into what will hopefully be a better opportunity here in May. The two guys that obviously – need to wake up at the plate are Yandy Diaz and Randy Arozarena. This team is going to go only as far as those two guys, I think, carry them at the plate, especially with all the injuries that they've had with, to guys like Brandon Lau and Josh Lowe and the like.
All right. Steve, you've always been the mature, rational one of the three of us when discussing the Rays. What is your level of concern? Because obviously they haven't started a season like this in a while. The injuries, some of them are not going to get better. Some guys are coming back around the All-Star break. Some guys could come back here in the month of May, but there's a lot of not producing the way they have in the past. What is your level of concern with this team?
It's mixed. I would say for some of the guys, this has been a slower than usual start. Yandy is a guy that I would point to as saying, you know, he's too good not to get going. And when he gets going, you know, they always say you are what the back of your baseball card says you are. And this guy hit 330 last year. And obviously, to get to that mark, he's going to have to go on quite the tear. So I expect to see him turn things around. Randy Arozarena is a different story, though, because the scouting report on him has always been, don't throw him a fastball, because it doesn't matter how hard it is, he can see it, he can react to it, and he can hit it. And he has not been doing that this year. And I don't know if that is part of the bulking up that he did. I mean, he got noticeably bigger this year than he was, say, last year or even 2022. And I wonder how much of that is affecting what's gone on at the plate. And that's going to be a much bigger issue than I think, like a Yandy Diaz's. I think Randy's issues, I think, are much deeper seated.
Well, if that's the case, Steve, that's a bad sign because they need his bat. I mean, I don't know if it's the most important bat.
No doubt.
But without Arozarena's bat, this team is going to struggle to produce runs, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. I mean, you expect him to be able to come up with guys on base and produce, and he has not done that in this first month. And that is certainly concerning, and especially the fact that he has not been able to get around on fastballs like he did over the last two or three years. So, yes, that is probably the most concerning thing about this this lineup. Now, there are other things that are certainly more encouraging. You certainly expect to see Junior Caminero, who was injured through the first month at AAA, but has come back and looks a lot better this year. And I would think that you're going to see him at some point sooner rather than later. The question will be, where do you play him? But I certainly think that if his bat is as warm as it's been at AAA, you need to get him back in this lineup as well.
Talking with Steve Carney, StPete9.com, StPete9.com. Also hosts the Under the Orange Roof podcast. Follow Steve on X at Steve Carney, CARNEY. They're in theory, Steve, they're going to start getting a little healthier in terms of the pitching. Maybe a couple guys can come back before this month is out. Maybe a couple of guys around the All-Star break. We haven't asked this question in a long time, Steve. Do the Rays have enough pitching?
Yeah, the question is not going to be, do the Rays have enough pitching? The question is, do the Rays have enough relief pitching? Because we've seen the starters go down in years past. This year, they now don't have Pete Fairbanks. They don't have Colin Pochet. They don't have Chris Devinci. And so the question becomes, not can you take some of these relievers and make them starters like they've done with Zach Littell, like they're trying to do with Tyler Alexander. Can you take some of these guys that are going to be swingmen and make them back into relievers once the Taj Bradleys and the Shane Bosses and hopefully the Drew Rasmussens and Jeffrey Springs come back? Because you need that in the bullpen, and that's where the true question lies, is can they get enough relief pitching in order to help complement the guys that they are hopefully going to get back into the rotation.
Well, how do they do that, Steve? I mean, they're not typically a midseason trade team. With the injuries that they have, the farm system's going to be taxed. Where do they get the pitching from?
Well, I mean, they remade the bullpen on the fly last year. They went out and got Jake Diekman. They went out and got Littell. They went out and got Robert Stevenson in the middle of the season and did so for a song. Diekman had been released and was a signing. Littell was a waiver claim. Stevenson, they traded a prospect that they weren't really interested in to get him. I can see them doing something similarly this year, you know, looking around the waiver wire, looking around at guys that get designated for assignment here coming up through the middle of the season. It's not ideal, and certainly I'll be curious to see how they do it without Peter Bendix this year, of course, who is now running his own shop in Miami. He's been a guy that I know that was big into finding those jewels in the rough like they did last year. So I'm kind of curious to see how that works this year.
Steve, any talk in the game about the game itself? Joel Sherman wrote an interesting piece earlier this week in the New York Post in which he said, yep, game's faster. There's no doubt about it. Rob Manfred, you know, the pitch clock change again this year is taking another 3 minutes off the games. But that people in the game are going, yep, we're still boring. We're just doing it in less time.
You know, I think that a lot of what has been made about it, about the speed of the game, is certainly a big plus. There's still a lot of 3-2 outcomes. I mean, you've seen it throughout the league. There's still a lot of strikeouts. There's still a lot of walks. There's still a lot of home runs. I think the league itself would love to be able to see more stolen bases. I think that there are guys throughout organizations around the league that will hopefully start to get that aspect going, but that is going to take more time than just cutting minutes off of times of game. The Rays have this guy, Chandler Simpson, who I believe is in Bowling Green in high A this year, so he's still a couple of years away, but he's a guy that they think that can steal 100 bases in a season. The Phillies have Carl Crawford's son, Justin Crawford, playing in high A this year. He's only 19 years old, but they feel like he can steal 80 or 100 bases in a season as well. And there are other guys around the league that are in the minors that are certainly looking at that speed aspect to try and get back into this game of baseball that we all love. But it is going to take more time.
Steve, as always, we appreciate your time and your insight. All the best in your travels and with StPete9.com and the Under the Orange Roof podcast. All the best.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate it.
Steve Carney, C-A-R-N-E-Y. Follow him on X. We talked about it last hour, Mark, in our starting five. Mike Trout, another injury. Torn meniscus in his knee. He has no idea how he did it. I will say he stole the base and scored a run late in the game on Monday night. Woke up Tuesday morning in a hotel, couldn't get out of bed. But in our Twitch chat room, the question was asked, is Mike Trout becoming the next Ken Griffey Jr.? Mark, take the pandemic year out of it, because he played 53 games, but we only played 60. In 2021, he missed 125 games. 2022, he missed 43. Last year, he missed 80. Now he's going to miss 2 months with a knee injury. This is when he's 29, 30, 31, and 32 years of age. Mike Trout also, by the way, is no longer a career 300 hitter, because his average continues to go down. Even this year, he's leading the majors in homers with 10. When he goes on the injured list, he's hitting 220.
That's changing your game for what the game wants. That's today's baseball right there. Home runs and hitting two and a quarter.
But is Mike Trout literally... Now, Griffey still ended up with over 600 home runs. And Mike Trout, by the way, 378 right now, home runs, Mike Trout. But, you know, Mike Trout hasn't finished in the top 10 in the MVP voting in the last 4 years. Remember, Mike Trout finished in the top 5 in the MVP voting in, let me do the math, in 9 consecutive seasons. And, you know, he's made All-Star games because that's, you know, fill out the ballot. He finishes top 3. But
I think the concern with Trout is it's everything. It's not that he's had a knee that's nagged him or an elbow. It's everything from his wrist
to his thumb
to his ribs.
Right, I mean, to a calf. The strained calf is what he missed 100-plus games for the 1 year.
And like David said, he's not a spring chicken, so you now got to really consider. You can't count on him being healthy really at all anymore, unfortunately.
But just throwing that out there. Rays have lost 4 of 5, and they're in last place in the AL East.
Well, more concerning to me than the last place is they're under 500.
Right.
Yeah.
If you're thinking about a wild card, you know, you what do you think in the American League got to get to 80? I mean, what was it, 89 wins last year got you in as a wild card? I think Toronto was the 6, and I thought they won just under 90. So, you know, you get in the American League, this is the National League where you made it with 83, 84 wins last year. This is the American League. You think we got to win a few more.
And I don't know how long Boston can continue on. I mean, they're playing way above their pay grade right now.
And you got 9 teams in the American League above 500 right now.
Right. But the teams in the AL Central, I don't know how much staying power the Royals and Tigers have.
Well, even the Guardians, they're playing over their skis too, I think.
Yeah, they are. But someone's going to win that division. So I just kind of you are absolutely right.
Do you know the Rays only have a better record than 3 teams in the American League right now? White Sox, Astros, Angels.
It's getting late early for Houston, by the way.
The Rays are tied with the Oakland A's in the standings right now in the American League. Oof. As Vern would say, oof-ta.
And attendance is similar.
Come on. Come on now.
Oh, it was a joke.
I know.
Not really, but it was a joke.
They'll have a good weekend this weekend. The Mets are in town. So, you know, they'll get 8,000 Mets fans show up for all 3 games. So they won't have Marlins or A's attendance. Come on now. Marlins, by the way, 6,700 last night. Big crowd in Miami.
Big crowd. Playing the Rockies.
Well, you know, they tried to blame it on Monday night because both the Panthers and the Heat were in action at home. So since neither one of them were in action last night and only 330 more people showed up. I think they should do, you know, they tried all you can eat. Maybe they need to do what the Mets did, dollar dog night.
Bring back dollar beer night. That'll bring fans in.
Now we're talking. That's how I met my wife.